Summer is definitely the sexiest season. I mean, think about it. The days are longer, the nights are hotter, and your sex life is too. And if you're looking to turn up the heat, how about a little help from our friends at Promescent? Summer is all about things hot and steamy, so I highly recommend you add something extra and tap into Promescent's lineup of pleasure-enhancing products. I've been singing their praises for years, since they started, and for good reason. Because first up, we have the legendary Delay Spray. This is the MVP of lasting longer and keeping those eager penile nerves in check. You just do a quick spray, and you're set to outlast even the longest days of summer, ensuring the party doesn't end before you want it to. So you can have the mind-blowing climax you're now so very well equipped to reach, thanks to Promescent. It just helps you last longer without all the worry. And for women, Promescent's warming arousal gel is a fun pre-sex ritual. You just rub it into your vulva a few minutes before and you'll feel it start to tingle, warming up every nerve ending. So you'll feel that much more pleasure everywhere before you even get going. So it's kind of like the sure thing. So make sure this summer is the sexiest one yet. Check out promescent.com/Emily and get 15% off at checkout. You get free shipping, 60-day money-back guarantee, discreet shipping, all the things. Promescent is your ticket to a more guaranteed good time. That's promescent.com/Emily. promescent.com/Emily for your exclusive discount. Check it out. Attention, pleasure seekers. What if I told you there was a toy that was so iconic that it practically set the standard for all my favorite products? Allow me to introduce or reintroduce to you the Magic Wand. Dubbed the Cadillac of Vibrators, the Magic Wand is more than just a toy. It's a culture icon, a symbol of power and unapologetic pleasure. Do you know any other toys that have been praised in Time magazine? Didn't think so. With a unique rumble that resonates deep within, the Magic Wand Original is not just a product, it's a trusted confidant. And it's a sure thing. Never had an orgasm? Try a Magic Wand. Never given your party a full body massage? Try the Magic Wand. Listen, it's rightfully earned accolades like Vibrator of the Year for decades, and I've been obsessed with my Magic Wand. I even drilled holes in my bedside table so that she's always next to me in case I need her. Well, that was years ago, because now there are multiple iterations of the Magic Wand, allowing you to pick whatever model fits your lifestyle. You can go wireless with the Magic Wand Rechargeable, tiny with the Magic Wand Mini or Micro. Micro is really mini. Or go for variety with the Magic Wand Plush. The best part though, all of them have the same powerful orgasmic rumble that made the original so popular. So if you're ready to make some magic, visit sexwithemily.com/magicwand and discover why the Magic Wand continues to cast a spell on the world. Magic Wand, not just a vibrator, an icon of pleasure.
All your stocking stories are freaking hilarious. And that was back when you couldn't just stock at home. Like on Instagram, you could find out everything now. Like you'd go out and do the work. Like,
right? I did it before. You could just like easily like just cyber stalk somebody. I was in the flesh.
You were stalking like real, weren't you like in a trunk?
Yeah, I was like in the bushes. I was like in your fucking driveway with my lights out.
You're like OG stalker.
OG.
Like,
You're listening to Sex with Emily. I'm Dr. Emily, and I'm here to help you prioritize your pleasure and liberate the conversation around sex. Jenny Molin is the author of City of Likes, a fictional comedy about mommy influencer culture and the intensity of female friendships, especially when one of them is a narcissist. Are they obsessed with each other? Do they want to have sex with each other? And what do you do when someone's perfectly curated facade finally cracks? Jenny and I met years ago, and I know you'll love her just as much as I do. Besides being a best-selling author, she's also an actor, host of the hilarious Third Wheel with Jenny Molin podcast, a mom and wife to actor Jason Biggs. On this episode, she talks about the personal experiences with social media that inspired her book, why she wants to see a sex therapist, and helps me answer your sex and relationship questions. For example, if you're in a relationship, is it okay to comment on someone else's Instagram telling them how attractive they are? Jenny and I give it to you straight. Intentions with Emily. For each episode, join me in setting an intention for the show. What do you want to get out of this episode? How could it help you? Well, my intention is to help you laugh, something we all need right now, right? Jenny is as real as it gets, and I think you're going to love her refreshingly honest take on sex in a long-term relationship and how social media shapes our real-life connections. Please rate and review Sex with Emily wherever you listen to the show. My new article, Overcoming Four Common Sex Fears, is up at sexwithemily.com. Also, check out my YouTube channel, social media, and TikTok. It's at sexwithemily for more sex tips and advice. If you want to ask me questions, leave me your questions or message me, sexwithemily.com/askemily, or call my hotline, 559-TALK-SEX or 559-825-5739. Always include your name, your age, where you live, and how you listen to the show. And totally cool to change your name if you want to remain anonymous. All right, everyone, enjoy this episode. Jenny Mullen is a writer, actor, Instagram personality, and New York Times bestselling author of the essay collections I Like You Just the Way I Am and Live Fast, Die Hot. Named by Huffington Post as one of the funniest women on both Twitter and Instagram, her new book, City of Likes, is on bookstands now. Find more Jenny on Instagram at Jenny Mullen, on Twitter at Jenny Ann Teets, or on JennyMullen.com. Let me just say, I've been a fan. I've met you like years ago. You were on Loveline with Dr. Drew. You came in with your husband, Jason Biggs, and your book, I think you guys, maybe you were coming on for your book. I believe it just came out. Uh-huh. Right? I Like You Just the Way I Am. And I was a guest co-host, so I didn't know, like, I didn't get prepped ahead of time, but I went home and I, like, devoured your book. And I loved it. And I think you're such a hilarious, relatable, authentic writer and so talented.
Thank you.
And then I, and I love you. I've been following you on Instagram. I just love all the things that you put out there. And, like, during the pandemic, you're so real. Just, like, following you with, like, things that I'm like, I wish I could just go out with like my zip medicine and like everything in the back, my kids crying and vomiting and all the things. And it just, you're just real and relatable and talented and all the things.
Thank you. Thank you. It's so nice.
Yeah, truly. So thank you for being here on the show. Thanks about your new book, which is a novel.
I've only waited how many years to get on this show? Sex with Emily. I heard about it, I think that day when I met you, and I feel like I had another couple girlfriends do your show. And I kept thinking, I'm like, I've
always wanted you to be ever since then, because, oh, here's what happened. So I know this is a little bit of old news or old story, but you had just for Jason's birthday hired a sex worker to have like a surprise threesome. So that was in the news. I was like, I love this girl that she did this.
Right. So, I know. And you were like, the first person talking about vibrators and everything.
Yeah.
I feel like you were ahead of your time back then.
I was ahead of,
Nobody was doing that.
But now they're everywhere, right? You buy them at like Walgreens and stuff.
Are now, like vibrators, you can like pick up with a matcha latte at like any wellness studio.
Exactly. So true. But it was it was much more taboo.
You pioneered that shit.
Yeah. It's been a long road. If you were here, I'd give you so many vibrators. But maybe you have vibrators.
I don't know. Now, I don't know. I don't really have sex anymore. Once you, like, I think, have been married as long as I have, you're like, what?
How's that going, not having sex? How does that go over? How does that go over in your relationship?
Thank God I'm not married to a guy that, like, that's his love language. So thank God. Because if I were with a guy who was like, we need to have sex once a week, I would be flipping the fuck out.
So how often then?
I mean, maybe once a month.
Okay.
And I'm proud of myself when I do. It's like going on the treadmill. I was like, damn, I am amazing.
I killed it today. Okay, we'll get into that, because it's like,
yeah,
one of the top questions that people ask me all the time is like, how many times a week should we have sex? What's normal? Is this okay? Yes. Is that okay? Once a week, three times a month, three times a year. And I always think, if you're both okay with once a month, then
yeah, like once a month even is like, I'm like, whoa,
you're like,
I rule. I made it within the month long period.
Do you like a reminder, to have sex?
I need that in my calendar, but I'm also bad at tracking my period. So who knows? I might be having sex once every 3 months.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't even know.
Well, as long as you're both okay with it, you've been together a long time.
We've been together 15 years. And a girlfriend of mine yesterday actually was like, when do I get to the point where I don't have to have sex once a week with this guy? Like, when is that? And I thought that was interesting. I was like, well, I don't know. I mean, I just got lucky that I'm on the same page with somebody, because I can imagine, I don't know, maybe if I married a Scorpio, it would be different.
What is he? I know you're a Gemini too. I'm a Gemini.
He's a Taurus.
Okay.
He's very stable, can be stubborn, but very grounding.
He grounds you.
Yes. he's like the Ethel to my Lucy. He's not really Desi. He's more Ethel, but he does hold the string to my kite.
Oh, I love that. You've been through a lot because I actually been doing a lot of like, you know, like I said, I've been following you and researching and all the things, but also just in listening to you talk about it, what I've heard you say about your relationship is, and we can get back to the sex thing, because people know how I feel that like, I do think intimacy is important in a relationship to make sure yes. you're connecting and you're intimate.
I think I do want to like see maybe like a sex therapist at some point to talk about it, because I don't think that I'm good with that kind of vulnerability or intimacy. I told Jason recently, I just had Gabby Bernstein on my podcast, and afterwards I was like, maybe I was molested as a child. I don't know if that's true or I'm just stealing her story, but I'm just
why,
like,
why so? Because
clearly
why?
I have issues with, I don't want to be touched.
Oh, okay.
It's just not my love language. I mean, I will get into it. It's not my go-to. And so I'm sure there's other shit there. I also had a very sexualized mother who was like always in a tadashi dress and going to a happy hour with some guy somewhere.
I mean, it's all related. It can be. So does the thing of you not wanting touch, because you are seeing a sex therapist right now in this moment.
Yes.
No, but it's the thing. I
manifested this.
You did manifest. No, but I'm curious, like, is it something about when you're actually having sex, are you okay with the touch and the connection? Are you like,
yeah, then I'm okay. I don't want to like stare into anybody's eyes, but
intimacy. It's intimacy.
Yes.
Perhaps that's harder for you. Being intimate.
Yes.
And you're so funny and relatable and all those things that maybe that's probably humor has been used.
I think that's a defense mechanism probably for not wanting to actually be intimate with anyone. But that's why having kids was a real mind fuck, because you can't help it. You're instantly vulnerable in a way that you've never been vulnerable. And now I'm suddenly in a relationship with the type of guy that I would have never gone for, because they play games. They toy with my emotions. They don't give me what I want. All the things that I tell my girlfriends to steer clear of. Now I'm living with my two sons.
They're your sons and you birthed them. They came out of your body.
Yes.
But going back to the touch thing, is Jason's love language, does his happen to be touch?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's probably acts of service and validation, praise.
Words of affirmation.
I think he likes to be touched. I just think he probably, you know, sometimes he does say, he's like, you never like even think to like put your hand on my shoulder. So I do need to work on it.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, how are you with your kids?
I'm affection. Super physical with them.
Okay.
Yeah. I smash their faces. Like I want to just like eat them.
Yeah. It's the best.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like nothing's really a problem until it's a problem, but I also like a seeker like you, been in therapy since I was like 10. Like I want to overturn every rock, every stone. Like what is the issues that we can get into? So first off, for me, like my love language is touch, but if it's not yours and it's not Jason's and he's not like, why aren't you touching me more? It is something to like, if it's not a problem and you are having sex, there probably is something there that maybe when you were growing up, it wasn't okay, or your primary caregivers, maybe seeing your mom. I think we tend to overreact or react to what we saw in the past with our parents in the current moment. So maybe that was a thing, but it doesn't sound like it's coming up in a way that's a problem, but it's, I would just love you to feel more, I don't know, like the desire thing. So do you ever feel like you are in the mood?
I want to feel more like, I want to get into that. Yeah. I wish that I did have more of a desire to connect physically. That's why I think I should go to therapy, to sort of unearth, like, why is that?
Desire to connect sexually or desire to connect physically? Like, it's all sort of related in a way. I think the touch thing comes along. Like, what I'm more interested in is it's to think about, like, sexually. When you guys first got together at the beginning, which we know the honeymoon phase, everything's, like, always amazing at the beginning. But were you guys having sex a lot more often? Was it more?
Yeah, probably. Yes, in the beginning. But there was also drugs. I mean, we were wild. We were so crazy. I got pregnant. We were on ecstasy. It was like a lot of things went down in the beginning. But then eventually we moved into the space where we just like to sit on the couch and eat Pirate's Booty and hate watch The Bachelor.
Which is also fun.
Which is also so intimate.
Yeah. Do you ever feel any of the desire anymore in your body? Like, do you ever like masturbate or feel turned on by anything, other things besides Jason?
Yes. But some more like when I'm having a hard time going to sleep, things like that. I'm like, oh, maybe I should masturbate to make myself like calm down or fall asleep.
That works. It totally does work. How about intimacy beyond just like, intercourse, right? Which is what we, which I actually am trying to like take the focus off. We're also focused on like, well, we did it. We had penetrative sex and that's it. But that's yes. for the majority, I don't know about you, for the majority of vulva owners, that's not how we're even going to have the most pleasure. So it's through intimacy yes. and connection. Like how often do you guys just, do you feel that you're just like holding hands, cuddling, watching TV? Like, is that?
Yes. When we're away from our children, we're very physical and touchy and kind of huggy. And, you know, I feel like we hold hands when we walk and that kind of thing. So I think children also change the dynamic where it's almost as if we're like on the same basketball team and I'm passing to him, he's passing to me. There isn't a lot of time for the intimacy when we're on in that way.
Then you have young kids, right? How old are the boys?
I have an 8-year-old and a 4-year-old.
How do you have any time for anything? That's the other thing. It's that like you literally have no time. You've no, they're boys. I understand that. You've no time, but how is your relationship? Because I was listening to a show you did. You're like, Jason and I, we like text our couples therapist. You know, when yes. we're like, so you have a therapist that you work with.
Yes. Who we've been with since we first got together, Beth Becker in LA, actually.
Okay.
She's fantastic. If anybody needs a couples therapist.
What's her name?
She's always like, why do you bring me up? Her name's Beth Becker.
Okay.
And Beth she's Becker, based in LA. She's like right, but her office is like off Beverly Glen area.
You have the therapist that you go to like once a week?
When we're good, we're going once a week. And then sometimes what happens is we will be busy and miss a week and then think that we're killing it. We're like, well, we don't need therapy right now. We're just so strong as a couple. We've evolved. And then inevitably something will happen. Usually something with the kids. We're at each other's throats. And it's like, why don't you call Beth Becker if you really want to talk to me about that? You know, we triangulate her in that way. And then she'll receive a text from one of us or both of us, and we get back on the wagon.
But that's super healthy, I think, that you have someone to talk to about it. But if the
Thank
sex,
God.
Because I don't want to get into
I don't
into
know
the
how
sex.
Couples do it without therapy. I really don't know how anybody stays together
it's a
without
requirement.
Therapy.
Well, tell me how it's worked for you. Okay, so this is what I always say. I'm a huge advocate of therapy, always. I'm like, I think every couple needs it right away to communicate, to understand, like, everything in the relationship. Like, when you get into arguments and all the things in life, and you start to build a relationship with the therapist over time and with each other, and you have homework and all the things. And so I think that's really healthy. But if maybe you could talk about it, after 15 years, you've been it since the beginning, how would you describe how therapy has helped your relationship?
Well, it's shifted my perspective. I mean, I used to think that I couldn't be wrong or that my reality was correct. And that's what's so insane is that the way you perceive something being done to you doesn't mean that it's actually happening to you at all. And we sit there and say, oh my God, you know, you put the narrative on them of like, it's triggered your own childhood shit. So you feel like you can finish the end of the sentence before you've even listened to them. And you're reacting to things that, you know, it's almost, it's that AA saying, if it's hysterical, it's historical. So most often it isn't even about the person you're fighting with, but you're like ready to die on that mountain over something like some perceived offense to you that probably has to do with your childhood shit, not even what's going on in the moment with you and your partner. It took me a long time to realize that.
Can you give an example of what's happened lately?
It'll be something about Jason is away and I have the kids and he's working, you know, on a movie or something. And I'm stuck in Anguilla with food poisoning with the kids. They're raging. They're going crazy. I don't know what I'm going to do. How am I going to get home? I'm out of the country. I can't move. And I'm upset with him because he either like isn't listening to me. Instead of saying, oh, Jenny, it must be so hard what you're going through, he's getting offended because he wants to be the good boy. So he has that stuff of like, mommy's mad at me and I need to defend because I've done nothing wrong. So he's shutting down when what I'm looking for is I need to be heard. I need to be seen. I feel abandoned. It's triggering my abandonment shit. And by you pushing away and defending yourself, I'm feeling that injury over and over again. So we get into the same lock that we can't kind of break free of until somebody points it out to us.
That's good. That's exactly it. We're all being re-triggered from our childhood conditioning.
Re-triggered. Yes.
That's it. Every moment. Every moment. It's so true. Abandonment. That's one of my key ones as well.
If it's hysterical, it's historical, people.
I love all the AA sayings. And I also love fear, false evidence appearing real. So many great
AA. Yes.
So many great AA quotes. What are the other ones I always quote? But that's because Jason's sober, right?
Yeah, he's powerful. Been sober now for, I mean, basically all of Sid's life. And that has been amazing. That's like played such a big role in our relationship. I mean, I can't even imagine co-parenting with somebody who had a problem and was still using. That would be tricky.
I don't know how people handle that either. What we often crave, right, in a new relationship or in early on in the relationship is everything's new and exciting and it's novel. And like, I've never seen this person naked. I've never kissed this person before. Like, there's a new fantasy. There's something new. But you're with someone for 15, 10, 15 years. And like, it's all kind of the same and you're in your routines. And so what we often need is that novel thing. And so you guys are kind of in your pattern. So is there conversations you can have? Is there... You know, well, I was going back to the thing about the threesome that you had. Now that was a while ago, before children, but was that something? And I know it ended up being like a joke, but there is something to that. Like, even if it's just I thought
oh, this could be fun. This is something like I was trying to be wild and fun because we had just gotten married, and that sort of there is a bit of like. Just like an erasure of self, like in getting married and having babies, like for women. And I felt like I wanted to still be me and my crazy Jenny and fun. And I thought, well, this is something that might spice it up and make it interesting. And then it became just like a comedy of errors.
But, so it wasn't like a fantasy of you. You guys aren't like, oh, I really want to. That's not like a lingering thing that you'd want to have a threesome or have someone else in the relationship. Right now, we're just trying to have you guys have sex, no, right?
No. It feels like a lot of work now. Like if there was somebody else involved, even I think about people who are having affairs and I think, Jesus, that sounds like a lot of fucking work. If somebody else needed anything from me right now, I'm like, listen, I've got two kids. I work full time.
Really do.
You know, I think it's too much.
If you, because yeah, I feel
you
like
you want me to go down on you too. Exactly. I'm sorry, I'm tapped out.
I don't want like another penis that's making demands in my life. Literally, right? That's the last thing you
penis need. Penis or vagina, both. I'm like, guys, anything. I don't have it in me. I'm done.
Well, you guys seem really solid. Like even just watching what I see online and all the things. I mean, what I just love is that you have a counselor in place and you work on it. So yes. To me, that's
and we're willing to do the work. I mean, that's the thing about Jason and I, and that's why I feel like. I never get scared about our relationship, even though we've definitely been through dark times. I don't ever think that we're not going to make it because one, we're both super determined when we put our minds to things. We don't like to fail, but also we are willing to change. We're willing to do the work and change ourselves. We're not just expecting the other person to like clean up their act to fit into our schedules.
So you keep making each other like the best versions of yourself throughout this. That's really what a healthy relationship is.
I mean, it's hard. Like he drives me absolutely fucking crazy and I drive him crazy. So I don't want to like, make it sound like it's easier than it actually is. It is really fucking hard, but we do love each other. And I don't know. I just feel like I got lucky with who I chose on a lot of levels.
And you were young too, right? You guys met.
Yes. I was so young. We were on drugs. We were like wild. But there was something about Jason that I just knew. I mean, to his core, I feel like he is my twin flame. We're so different, but we have so much of the same. Our just like our belief system is so similar.
And your values and all that.
Our
so that
values.
Must feel really good.
Exactly.
And that really helps you kind of flourish in your life, in your career, and parent, not to always be worrying about, is this going to last? Is it not?
Oh yeah. And he's so much better than me about like my career. I mean, this ego strength that this guy has is insane. I literally have made a career out of talking shit about him, stalking his ex-girlfriend, raging about the fact that he's famous and I'm not. And that was literally how I started my fucking writing career. And he has done nothing but support me every step of the way. He shows up. He'll do like anything. He'll read my shit over and over again. He's just better than me.
That is just so loving. That is an ego thing, right? He's just very confident in who
he is. He's just so confident. Mm-hmm.
But Jenny, you come across as so confident too. Like I look at you, I'm like, I wish I could do, because I've been sort of off of social media a lot lately, like in my personal life, just sort of been I don't know, regrouping and less doing stuff like that. But I'm like, sometimes I just want to be like, this is what's going on in my life. Not that I'm saying I'm something other than I am. We'll get to your book in a minute, City of Likes, which is all about like curating a certain image online. But I guess I look at you and think, confidence I know is on a spectrum, but always, we're always changing, but very confident, like self-assured.
I mean, that's so sweet. I think the thing about me is that like, I don't have a button that like, I don't know how to hide my truth. I don't think I know how to sort of modulate what is happening, what I'm saying, what's coming out, what I'm presenting. I've always come from a place of like, we're all fucked up. And I don't know if you feel that way too, having been in therapy since you were a kid.
Yes.
I just feel like everyone's family is dysfunctional. Everyone has these things. So talking about them, why should I feel shame? I feel almost when I'm open about that stuff, I'm able to disarm people. And when I was younger, I just did this podcast with Busy Phillips, who was my like arch rival in high school. I mean, we were pitted against each other for many years and our lives have woven in and out of each other's forever. And she said, I always looked at you and thought of you as being so perfect and that your life must be this and you must be that. And for me, I think that also my like brutal honesty growing up was my way of saying, I'm not fucking together. My shit is crazy. My parents have been married and divorced 6 times, but like, you just seem like this, like innocent little blonde girl. And people think, oh, her life's so easy. You know, her dad paid for college, whatever it is. And I needed to like really make sure that it was clear that like, I am other from like that. I didn't want to be lumped into that. I need to everyone to know that like, I am the Grendel figure of like Tribeca. Like I'm not those moms. I'm not fucking pulling it all off. I don't know. It's just a need to really disclose my truth in order to feel accepted.
After the break, Jenny and I answer an email from who's wondering if she should read into her partner's social media use. There's nothing quite like sinking your teeth into a good sandwich. But listen, carb guilt is real. I'm someone who's very invested in my health, and I like to get my carbs from oats and beans and fruits and not bread. But I love bread, so here's my hack. Thanks to Hero Bread, you can enjoy your favorite bready delights without the carb consequences. Hero Bread has turned those carby, empty calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious breads that boast 0 to 1 net carbs per serving, 0 grams of sugar, and are packed with loads of fiber and protein. The first time I tried their white bread, I was skeptical. Could it really taste good with such impressive nutritional stats? Well, I'm pleasantly surprised to say it absolutely does. The texture is just phenomenal. It's like this soft, airy, and it just toasts up like a dream. I've whipped up everything from grilled cheese to PB&J and even made enchiladas, wraps, and tacos with their tortillas. Each time, Hero Bread has been a game changer. And here's a kicker. Despite its light texture and great taste, Hero Bread fits perfectly into my health goals. It's been adding more fiber to my diet while keeping the sugar at bay. Whether I'm packing a picnic lunch, planning a road trip snack, which I often do, or prepping French toast for breakfast, Hero Bread is my go-to. So whether you're craving a classic sandwich, a burger, or a hearty bun, or even indulging in a low net carb croissant, Hero Bread is something for everyone. And I highly recommend checking their monthly small batch drops out so you can try goodies like the 1 gram net carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit and so much more. You won't believe what they have. So you ready to kick carb guilt to the curb? Head over to hero.co and snag 10% off your order with the code Emily. That's Emily at hero.co. I would love you to help me answer some questions that we get from listeners. I'd love to get your advice. Help us along here. We get a lot of questions. So I thought some of these would be fun for us to answer. Okay.
Great.
This is from 31 in San Francisco. Hey, Dr. Emily, dating during social media era isn't easy. I've been with my boyfriend for almost a year and we have a pretty good relationship despite Instagram. Recently, I found he commented on a girl's post that she was still pretty AF despite a horrible event that left her toothless. He has liked a few other posts of her and she's a pretty girl. There's so many beautiful women, so I can't blame him for feeling the need to look at them or follow them. Women are very beautiful and are overly sexualized, which is not his fault. And for men, it can be hard not to be curious. I want to know, should I stay calm as long as he's not physically cheating? I know it's unrealistic sometimes for individuals not to be curious or flirt. I think that personally, this is going to happen with Instagram. Your partner's going to comment on something and you got to talk to him about it and just say, this is how it makes me feel. Yes. We're in a committed relationship. When I see you commenting, it doesn't feel right. Kind of hurts. This is what it makes me feel. And I don't think that's your intention. Could you tell me more about what goes on in your head when you're making these comments? Or what comes up for you, Jenny?
I would flip the fuck out. I would be like, listen, you're done. You're done. You're commenting on other people's pages. I can't be with you. I would just be like, think about like how like that one like looks for me. That's just like mortifying. I don't want somebody that I'm in a relationship with to be like, you're still pretty as AF to somebody else. I'd be like, okay.
That's intense.
Hold your fucking roll, dude. You know, it's just too much. It's just not a good look.
It wasn't just like a like. It was a, you're still pretty.
Yeah, that's over the,
That is over the top. No, that's a good point. So you just address it right away.
Yes.
I think she's being too kind to him. I think you're right. Now that I'm looking back, I'm like, yeah.
Well, I feel like at one point I went on Jason's Instagram and I was like, you don't need to be following this person. You know, like he wasn't even around, but I was just going through the people he follows and deleting. I don't even know if he knows, to be honest. He doesn't know how to use it that well, so.
He's not that. He obviously, like,
you know what? He hasn't missed them, so I think I made the right choice.
But how has it impacted your relationship, social media? Has it or does it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it has for sure. You know, I was calling him Jaden on my Instagram for a while and he didn't like it. He was like, it's rude to me. It's disrespectful. How do you not see that? And so certain things he gets upset because he'll think that I've just crossed a line. But you know what? Jason's tolerance is so high. He has let me publish two books where I basically talk all about my obsession with his ex-girlfriend and with using a fake identity to befriend her. I mean, he has put up with so many shenanigans and lets me get away with murder, to be honest. So when he has a problem with something, I slow my roll because it's just rare.
All your stalking stories are freaking hilarious. And that was back when you couldn't just stalk at home. Like on Instagram, you could find out everything. Now, like you'd go out and do the work. Like,
right? I did it before. You could just like easily like just cyber stalk somebody. I was in the flesh.
You were stalking like real, weren't you like in a trunk?
Yeah, I was like in the bushes. I was like in your fucking driveway with my lights out.
You're like OG stalker.
OG.
Like,
yes.
My head goes off to you because like really like then now we're just lazy. We're just
lazy.
Home and Googling.
We're not doing the work. We're really not.
We're not doing the work at all. And so like, oh my God, Jenny, I love it. You just call it out. Yep. That is cool.
Yeah,
I think you got to just call it out. Call out your partner. Unfollow if it's not cool. And like, let your partner know how you feel.
Because would you be cool if your boyfriend said that to a girl right in front of you?
No.
No, you'd probably like throw a drink on him.
That's a really great analogy to think like, would you do that if we were at a party? Would you go up and say, like, you're still hot as AF? Would you do that?
Yeah, exactly.
You probably would.
Exactly.
That's a way to think about it. Okay. I love that. Okay. This is from Terry 53. It's a man. He says this, Dr. Emily, my girlfriend and I have been together for 2.5 years. We have a strong connection. We love each other, but it's been tough for 12 plus months. My dad died a year ago and I fell apart leaning on her too hard for too long. In January, she was struggling with demanding work, kids, and their activities and asked me to get my shit together, which I've been actively doing. Therapy, working out, reading, journaling. Our sex life dropped off at that point and has not fully recovered. Over the past 2 months, I've done a lot of work and feel much better. My girlfriend is still struggling, has admitted that she feels overwhelmed and burned out, and there's nothing left for herself or me. Here's the question. I know she will masturbate sometimes rather than have sex. She doesn't throw it in my face, but I feel jealous. I've asked her to tell me about it because it turns me on. Hell, I masturbate too, and I'd love to do it in front of her. Should I feel jealous or rejected when she uses her vibe rather than wanting to have sex? I'm assuming it's her way of self-care. What do you think?
I mean, I would say no. I definitely think they're two different things. One is self-care, and then the other is intimacy. We're circling back to the beginning.
I know.
Of our session. I mean, yeah, I think one is, you know, she's doing it to come down and to have like a moment for herself. And the other is a bit more performative and making more of an effort for him. So I think they're totally two different things. I get that he wants that connection with her and I think it's sweet, but I actually think that he should just honor her time for herself as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, here's the thing, you guys, you know, listening to the show, like masturbation is part of being sexually healthy and well, and it probably is self-soothing. It's making her feel connected to herself. We all probably could masturbate a lot more. So I feel like, yes. Sounds like he feels like he pushed her away because of the death and everything he's going through. So he just needs to find a way to connect with her again intimately. And what I would recommend here is like, what about some, you know, mutual masturbation, which I might recommend for you too, Jenny, because
interesting. Okay.
Mutual masturbation, which people are like, oh, that's weird. I don't want to see my partner masturbate. But here's why it works and it can be hot. It's because you know that you're both going to get off. You don't have to touch anyone else but yourself.
Right.
Which you might like. But also it's like hot to watch your partner please themselves. But also you know it's a sure thing, but you also kind of see what they do. And you might know this because you've been with Jason for a long time. I'm like for me, when I'm with a new partner, I'm like, oh, I didn't know that your hand goes up and over the tip like that. So now when I'm getting a blowjob, it's educational. I'm like, oh, you grab your balls. Well, clearly I'll grab your balls the next time I give you a blowjob. Yes. So you learn from it and it's sort of, it's still intimate and you're both having an orgasm.
Yeah, I like that. That's sweet.
Yeah, it is sweet. And also sex begets sex. So the other thing I would say.
That's true. I agree with you.
Like I'm, even though it's my job, like if I don't have sex or I don't masturbate, like sometimes I don't care either. It doesn't hit us over the head. And as women, right. We think
it's true.
It should be this spontaneous desire. Like I should just want sex. And the fact that I don't want sex means nothing's wrong with me. But the thing is, we have to work at it, especially like, and I would say the older we get, but it's, I used to always say that. But the truth is, I hear from women in their 20s who are like, I've been with my partner for 3 years and I don't care if we ever have sex again.
Yes, or, exactly. Yeah.
Right? Like, or we're on medication or birth control, or there's all these things that dampen our arousal and our desire. So what I think is really cool is to think about like, is sex important? Is it important to be aroused? Is it important to have orgasms? Like, yes, I love my partner. So to put things in place, like saying like, let's just masturbate together. You know, it's going to happen. It's an intimate thing. And the more you have an orgasm, you're like, oh yeah, orgasm. I kind of like that. And so like,
that was fun. Yeah.
Like I forget too. So it's my job. And I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I gotta do that. And then I want more. It's like working out. Like
it's
if you don't work
true.
Out for a while.
Yes.
And then you're like getting back to the gym the first time sucks.
Oh, oh my God. You're like, what's a sit up?
Right. Exactly. And you're like, I did 3 sit ups and it's great. But then with sex, it's kind of the same thing. Because then, the more time that goes by, it's harder to get back to the gym and it's harder to get back to sex.
Oh, it's so true.
It's a muscle. So I recommend going back to a partner and you. It's something, you know, it's kind of fun to think like, talk to her and say, I think it's hot. Let her think it's hot that she masturbates because you think it's hot.
Uh-huh.
Terry, you do think it's hot. You said it was masturbate. You think it's hot. And so rather than like, you know, just saying like, I would love to watch you masturbate. Let's do it together. And then that just breaks the whole thing that she's feeling bad about herself. Or you're feeling bad about it, threatened. Cool. Okay. Thanks. Let's talk about City of Likes for a minute. Yeah. Tell me about this because it is more about the mom influencer that you kind of got, that your character in the book gets into. But then also about, I love too, about narcissistic female relationships, which I've never, like narcissism is totally having a moment now. Everyone loves talking about narcissists, but about narcissist friendships. I thought all of it was very interesting. It's great concepts that you're tackling.
Well, you're going to love the book because if you know me, you're going to see me in it. You're going to be like, oh, I mean, it's a novel, but it is so Jenny. And like, I mean, so many of the issues that I get into in it, it's just all of my darkest fears. It's like my most personal, vulnerable truths. Things that like, I don't think I could have written this book as a memoir because I don't know. One, I would have been afraid that I would have hurt my husband and my family with some of the things I disclosed. And two, I would have been driven out of New York City because of like the people that I'm going after and like kind of like skewering. So I knew it had to be fiction, but I didn't know how to write fiction. I didn't know what I was doing. I wrote the book. It took about a year to write it. Took out the pitch. It didn't sell. I had to pull it off the market. I then had to go rewrite it. I took another year to rewrite it because like I can't let something sit in a drawer. I'm just going to become psychotic. I do like seem to be fueled by rejection in some weird fucked up way where if somebody tells me no, or I can't have it, I feel like, oh, now the story's getting good. Like now here I am the hero against insurmountable odds. Like this is the story that I want to tell. Like, this is the story that I want to see to fruition. So I just doubled down on that shit and took it out a year later and still was not getting the kind of feedback I wanted, because now at this point people are like, who wants a book about social media? That's terrible. And privileged women in Lower Manhattan. I think that might read as tone deaf in a post-COVID world. So people were scared. And I just was at the point where I said, I'm going to publish it myself if I have to. This is my truth. And this is the story that I really needed somebody to tell me, to be perfectly honest. And that is what happened. I ended up finding a producer who had never published books before, who had an imprint, and he said, okay, let's do it. I believe in you. I believe in you. Let's go for it.
Well, that's amazing. Congratulations. You kept going for it. I love that determination. But tell me about the story though.
So the story is about this young mom who moves to Manhattan. She's in the throes of postpartum. She's just had her second child. She doesn't know what she's going to do with her life. She's debating, you know, how does she get back into the game? How does she find herself? How is she going to also be the mom she always wanted when she didn't have the mom she always wanted? So there's just a lot of doubt and a lot of insecurity. And she ends up meeting this hugely successful mommy influencer who kind of takes her under her wing and shows her Manhattan from like that point of view, where she's going to like weddings, branded dog weddings and underground mommy supper clubs and fashion week, crazy, you know, Parisian vacations. And so her life gets turned upside down and she really gets like engulfed by this woman who is a narcissist. And the dynamic, it's like, I see it a lot in YA novels, these like obsessive friendships, but I don't see it in adult women's fiction. And I really wanted to talk about what happens when you fall, you know, under the spell of a narcissist, because nothing feels better than when they shine their light on you. You're like, I'm mommy's favorite. She chose me. I'm the one. And that just high is so addictive. But when the light goes out on you, when you stop feeding them, it's just like, you're completely, it's just eviscerating. And so I've had those relationships and they've taken me out of my life and my relationship and my family. And I've had to face a couple things, like my addiction to this need for external validation and also my own codependency. And so I really wanted to talk about that in the book. I really wanted to like get into what that is. And like, do they want to fuck each other? Maybe that could be part of it.
That could be.
Do they just want to be, you know, best friends? Do they want, what is it? But you almost don't know, because like as women, we date each other. Do we even really know?
No.
You want to be them. You want to engulf them. You want to like swallow that person whole.
So the thing about the narcissist though, friendship is just, and narcissism in general. So let's just talk about that. Cause I know you also said you had a narcissist mother. I had a narcissist family, a lot of them, but with like in friendships, it's like, how does that look and how can we avoid that? You said you cut it off because they say like you're cutting off the narcissistic supply when you stop giving it to them. But like, what did you learn from that?
Well, I still do it. And it's like, it's crazy because I've spent my life judging women who let men treat them like shit or who will jump through hoops for a man or, you know, whatever it is. And I've always been so judgmental, like pull your life together. Why would you spend 1 second in that kind of a relationship? And it was almost like this, like stepping outside the matrix moment when I was at my book launch and I was kind of going off about this female friend and my publicist looks at me and she's like, well, you'll be friends with her again. You'll do it again. We're going to have the same conversation all over again. And I thought to myself, oh my God, I am that girl. I just do it with women. So I think I do have a pattern of it. And I've collected these narcissists. I collect like mean mommy types. Because I want some desperately to like win my own mother over. I want to have this corrective experience. I'm seeking it out. This book is me sort of tackling that issue, but I couldn't possibly sit here and tell you that I'm healed. I just maybe like have psychically killed these women in my books.
Do these women know who they are though? I know you said you'd have to move, but do they think they know who they are?
No, I don't think so. I don't think narcissists see themselves, which is amazing, which makes them so fun to write.
They're so fun. They just be so happy that they're even maybe in the book, right?
Oh my God, yeah. It's a classic. Like my mom's just like, don't believe everything you read.
Because your mom, yeah, because you love
it.
You're right. That's the thing. That is so, so interesting. They don't know. They don't, they don't really care. Like, they don't really understand it. But it's like, I think that's just really healthy. Like, you're kind of working out yourself in the books, and then codependency is another thing. How would you explain your codependency? Because we try to talk about it. It's such a harder concept to, because there's a narcissist and the codependent. And I think we need more language around it too, because I think narcissism is also a spectrum.
Well, my therapist always says, she's like, you're the least codependent I've ever met, because I never invested in Jason's drinking. I was like, kill yourself. I mean, if you're just going to drink, like, I didn't like, I didn't start making it about me, or, you know, his drinking is hurting me. He just one day told me he wanted to be sober. And I was like, okay. But I never attached to that in any way, which I don't know why. But Jason and I are both kind of codependents, which is interesting, and is plays a really, it's a
so there isn't funny, really narcissism, just codependence. I have that too. Oh my God, that's so funny. This is the relationship I'm in now. I hadn't really thought about that, but that's kind of what it is. Because we're not, we're both, a little bit codependent. How do you handle that?
Well, I'm like, tell me about you. Don't tell me about me. Tell me about you. Talk about you right now. Don't talk about like, well, I'm not doing anything to you, actually. So like, that's a lot of our conversations when we're fighting.
Seems like it's healthy. I like this. I mean, I'm sort of down with your whole thing. Do you enjoy this process of writing the book?
I loved writing the book. I loved it. When I was writing the book, I was like, this is what I was meant to do. Like, this is truly what I was meant to do. But I hated the math of trying to figure out how to write a novel. I went from writing nonfiction and short stories to writing a story that had to last 300 pages. That was tricky. It helped once I had an editor come in and say like, no, you need to like earn this decision, because in memoir, you don't really have to earn your moves. You're like, I went to Morocco to meet the women who wove the rug in my house because I thought that they might have answers for me. You don't need to like earn that. You're just like, well, that's just Jenny being fucking Jenny. But in the novel, it's like, if a woman's like about to like cheat on her husband and like sleep with this other woman, you kind of have to earn that.
I'm going to ask you, Jenny, next, the five questions we ask all of our guests. There are quickie questions.
Okay.
Ready? Very quick. What's your biggest turn on?
I think my biggest turn on is somebody who's like in control and can like get something done. Like, I love a guy that speaks another language that I either speak or don't speak. I think it's so hot. I love feeling like, oh, he's got this handled.
Biggest turn off.
Cheap. When somebody's cheap.
So not hot. What makes good sex?
What makes good sex? That is a good question. I don't actually know. No, what makes good sex? Honestly, like usually, like I would say like sex with somebody you don't know at all. Like a stranger. Not that I've had that in years, but I just remember like that was so exciting and fun because you like literally don't know the person. I'm like, Jason, I want to open a place where people just go in and have sex with robots. He's like, I think that's how prostitution is illegal. I'm just like, but doesn't it sound great? You have to have no emotional connection. You can just like hook up.
Yes, that exists. Robots, sex workers. Yeah, because it's that spontaneous. What I was saying earlier when I was trying to therapize you, it's that newness. That's why it's so hot at the beginning, because it's spontaneous. It's new. You don't know what's happening.
It's new, but also I don't have to be like intimate. Like they don't know me. That's like why for me, it was always safer.
This could be a hot thing for you guys to fantasize about together. Okay. Not actually make it happen, but like watch porn together when that happens.
That's
when
true.
Something that happens. These are just the little sparks. Okay. Something you would tell your younger self about sex and relationships.
I would say have more sex, like, and have more relationships. I think for so long, I thought I'm not getting involved with this person, or like, cause I only wanted to be involved with people that like, I thought I could be in a real relationship with. And so there were a lot of missed opportunities for me where if I were going back now, I'd be like, why didn't I just like fuck that guy or girl or whatever it was? Like, why was I like, I'm too good for this? You know?
I want to circle back to that in a minute. What's the number one thing you wish everyone knew about sex?
I don't know. I don't know. I feel like there's so much for me to learn.
I don't know. Maybe learn, sure, talk, communicate about it. Talk about it, I think.
Yeah.
Got it. Can we go back to something you just said? So what do you think kept you from just doing it then? Like in your, just having sex with someone?
Because I like, it, you know, for me, I thought of sex in like sort of a negative way based on the fact that my mom was so sexualized and was constantly sleeping with people, and I just saw it like, I don't want to be that. I don't want to be her. And I don't want to have a bunch of boyfriends or, you know, girlfriends, whatever it was. I don't want to be that promiscuous or that easy in a way. Like, I looked down on her for like the giving herself over to people is like how I saw it. I was like, ugh, you know, I'll never be like that. And so I was sort of snobby in a weird way. And now I'm like, why didn't I just, I mean, for my own pleasure, why was I depriving myself?
Yeah, that's so interesting. Because the messages you got, well, I think going again, circling back, this the messages you got around sex were really confusing. And so by having so your confusing. Mom, she was so sexual in front of you. And since there was no sex education, no one was telling us about what it meant to be sexually empowered or sex positive or to that it was okay for women to have pleasure and it was okay for us.
Oh, right.
We grew up in a time where it was like that we couldn't ask for what we want, that it was more about the men asking us for.
Yes.
And so it was a different
time.
All
about the men. Like, and I just like resented the men because they took my mom away from me. So I was just like, fuck that. You know, I just didn't want anything to do with it.
And so you went the other direction, which it sounds to me like now that we're talking that there is probably a lot about your really early interpretations of sex in the home that you just went the other direction. You're like, I'm not even going to be sexual. I'm not going to allow anyone to have me. I'm not going to be that.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever done any stuff around that, but that is probably something that, again, this stuff gets locked in at such a young age.
It's
that
might have kept you from like family systems therapy.
Yes. That's such good stuff too. Mm-hmm. I love all of that. The family systems is really interesting. So it sounds like maybe something got lodged in there that sort of not allowed you to really feel the depths of your most like sexual self because there's that got linked in that was like, you can't be sexual. You know, we all
I'm
have
like in a kiddie pool with my sexuality.
Exactly. thank you, Jenny. Thank you for sharing all this.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad we finally got to do this.
I know, me too. I'm really excited. Tell me where people can find you. They can find the book. I'll be with
you. Yes, and I want to have you on my podcast. It's called Third Wheel with Jenny Mullen.
Yes,
I need to have you on.
Will you be in LA at all? And I'm going to be in New York this summer. But
I'm coming to LA. I have an event at the Grove on July 11th. Jenny Mullen on Instagram. And the book is City of Likes.
I'm so happy for you. Really, congratulations.
Thank you so
much. I would love to meet you and see. I would love to be on your show. Be honest.
Okay, please. I'm going to contact you.
Okay. Thank you so much, Jenny.
Thank you, Emily. Thank you so much.
Appreciate your time.
Have a good night.
Bye. You too. Bye-bye. That's it for today's episode. See you on Friday. Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. Be sure to like, subscribe, and give us a review wherever you listen to the podcast and share this with a friend or partner. You can find me on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Sex with Emily. Oh, I've been told I give really good email. So sign up at sexwithemily.com. And while you're there, check out my free guides and articles for more ways to prioritize your pleasure. If you'd like to ask me about your sex life, dating, or relationships, call my hotline, 559-TALK-SEX. That's 559-825-5739. Or go to sexwithemily.com/askemily. Special thanks to Acast for powering the Sex with Emily podcast. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com.